Here's Bob McKenzie, our TSN hockey insider. What's the vibe like out there, Bob?
It's wet.
Okay.
Same as the last time. Same as 2006, eh?
Yeah. Well, they said the weather in Vancouver and Victoria has been great the last couple of months, but you know, it was a nice day yesterday when I got here, but she's a pouring rain today, I'll tell you that much. So it's stereotypical BC weather, I guess.
Hey, Bobby, you know what I found funny was yesterday I was writing a lead for Mark's story, and I had thought that it had been there since 2006, but 2006 was the last time that the city of Vancouver, I was out there at that World Juniors, and it was great because Phil Kessel was the stud for the Americans. Evgeny Malkin was the stud for the Russians. Johnny Taves played on the Canadian team, but if you look at that roster, and Canada smashed Russia in the final. They completely shut down Malkin. Sutter had them wound up, and it was a great, great tournament. The crowds were unbelievable. I do remember this, Bob, though. You remember how vociferously they booed the American team? I remember Phil Kessel's family was to the right of where I was, and there was some sort of soft lumber tariff issue that was going on between our countries, and that was the first time. And I understand it's a border city, so it's a little bit different. You know, you get tired of playing the Americans. They probably get tired of playing us, but boy, they went at them hard.
You know what, Dutchie? They're still talking about your performance at that World Juniors. At least we are. So that's number one.
Honestly, I will honestly say I was probably the MVP that year. I had an MVP type World Juniors in 06.
That was your coming out party for sure.
Wow.
Anyway, comeback player of the year. So, anyways, that's another story entirely. But you're right about the 06 and. And remember the Jack Johnson had a phantom elbow and everybody was upset about that. And you're absolutely right. It was a phenomenal tournament. And everything you underlined, and you talked about Brent Sutter having the boys wound up. That was the World Junior. Like it had to be one of the most physical World Juniors I've ever seen. Gord Miller and I were talking about this on Leafs Lunch one day. Ryan O'Meara ran about 250 feet, which is hard to do in a 200-foot arena. To hit Evgeny Malkin and take him out. And Steve Downey was crashing and banging and running from 100 feet, knocking guys through the end boards. And man, oh man, it underlines how much the way the game is played has changed. And that was 2006. So here we are 13 years later. And you wouldn't even recognize the style of play from that World Junior to this World Junior. And that's not to say there's no hitting now. But man, oh man, it's much more of a speed and skill and puck control game. And I was talking about this last week too. There's new rules in the IIHF this year on interference. And they're going basically zero tolerance. If a player has let the puck go from his stick, he's not eligible to be hit. There's no such thing as finish your check in the IIHF anymore. And it's going to be fascinating to see how these games are called and how hard it is for North American players to adjust to basically zero tolerance on hitting a guy if the puck's gone. If you hit a guy and the puck's already off the stick, the two-minute minor penalty, unless you were already committed to the hit when the guy got rid of it, that's a discretion call. But, you know, that's a two-minute minor. Now, if you really lower the boom on a guy, i.e. Reeves on Tom Wilson, that's suspendable. In the IIHF from here on in. So zero tolerance on head and neck contact, zero tolerance on hitting guys when they don't have the puck. The IIHF is going down a road the NHL is not going, but in the meantime, for things like the World Juniors and World Championships, there could be a huge difference between what we're used to seeing and how the referees call the games.
With Bob McKenzie, our TSN Hockey Insider. Bob's out in BC. The World Junior Camp is officially underway. And there's obviously a lot of, you know, big-name talent that is in the camp, and I'm sure once we get to the games, the focal point will be on who the big boys are on Canada, and by the end of it, we'll know all 13 forwards, all 7 and 8 D, 2-3 goalies. But from my standpoint, and correct me if I'm wrong here, this feels like the Jack Hughes showcase. Is that simplifying it too much, or is that basically going to be the narrative the whole tourney?
That's going to be the narrative, and we say that even though we know that it's not easy for draft-eligible kids to come in and dominate this tournament. But when they're special players like a Connor McDavid, then there is a level of expectation that player is going to be the player that everybody talks about. And I can only tell you this, when they had the summer camp, I wasn't there, but when they had the summer camp in, I think it was Kelowna in the in August, and it was Canada, the United States, and a couple of European teams, Jack Hughes was by far the best player on the ice out of any of the countries that were there. And it's going to be another step up in competition, and things are for real once they start on December 26th. But there's no question that Jack Hughes and his brother Quinn, who's, of course, a Vancouver Canuck draft pick, and that's really got the fans out here on Lower Mainland really stoked, because U.S. is going to be based here in Victoria, and Vancouver Canuck fans are really excited to see how Quinn Hughes looks on Team USA, and he's expected to have a huge role on the blue line as an offensive defenseman. And obviously what Jack Hughes is going to do, and you know, the Canucks are winning a few more games than maybe people thought they were going to win this year. But they could still find their way into the lottery and find out whether Quinn's got bunk beds to bring to Vancouver for his brother.
Yeah, wouldn't that be something, eh?
That's exactly what they need. I mean, you pair Jack Hughes with Pettersson, and then you got Quinn coming. You've got Horvat, who's
Brock
been rolling. Brock Besser.
Yep.
I mean, that is setting up for a pretty nice future, I would think, in Vancouver.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting. And Hughes is obviously the projected number one and clear number one for this year's draft. Started a little slow this season, talking to the scouts, but in a recent Five Nations tournament a few weeks ago in Europe, he just shredded it. He just tore it apart. So I think he's setting up nicely to be the guy that everybody's going to talk about coming in. But, you know, I think the American under 18 team that he plays on is fantastic. It might be the best U.S. under 18 team they've ever had. The Austin Matthews led U.S. under 18 team was pretty good, but everybody thinks this one's even better.
Wow.
But their World Junior team, I know Craig Button in our countdown show said they're good, they're very good, and there's lots to be excited about, but they're not, you know, clear or prohibitive favorites. So, you know, that can factor in how a guy like Hughes might play as well.
Hey, Bobby, not to compare him to an NHL player, I haven't seen Hughes play, you clearly have. Whose game does he resemble, though?
Yeah, you know what? Actually, it's kind of funny. When I first saw him play, he was playing minor midget for the Toronto Marlies in the Greater Toronto Hockey League. And I thought, even though he plays center, and at the time, dimension-wise, very similar, he reminded me a lot of Mitch Marner, but with a little more, you know, a little more power and a little more dynamic. And that's saying something.
Yeah.
Because Mitch is really, but he just seemed to be a little faster, more dynamic skater than Mitch. He's very, very, very elusive and was dominant in junior hockey. But he's, you know, Mitch Marner, Clayton Keller, you know, those are the kinds of players. He makes everybody on the ice better. Gets the pucks very quickly, even though he's not big. I think he's listed as 5'11", 165, 160, maybe 170, if that. But he's strong on pucks, and he's really got a dynamic first step, and very quick and agile, and sees the ice extremely well, makes everybody on the ice better. But he's also got tremendous goal scoring ability. So that's the type of player, very explosive player, and as I said, makes everybody on the ice better the same way Marner and Keller and Patrick Kane and those types of players do.
With Bob McKenzie, our Hockey Insider, Leafs, Canes tonight down in Carolina. You can watch it on TSN 4. We haven't had a chance to catch up with you ever since all hell broke loose in the city because the Leafs lost two games. And, you know, now they're the softest team in the history of the league and something's got to give. What's your take on this whole conversation? I'm sure you're aware of it, Bob, but you know, this Leaf team, they're built differently. You talk about, you know, a change of era and a change of approach to the game. This Leaf team does not mirror the teams of the 80s or the 90s or the early 2000s. Where do you stand on all this?
Yeah, you just measure up against the other teams. And I know since Washington won last year and they played a, you know, pretty heavy game for as much speed and skill as they've got, lots of size too. But ultimately, the speed and skill wins out, and the Leafs kind of are what they are. I don't know, but hey, listen, if you can go out and get some power forwards that are elite, I mean, you know, Alexander Ovechkin's a big man, but, you know, that's not what makes, you know, he's first and foremost, he's a goal scorer, And so I don't know that the Leafs dramatically need to change the complexion of their team as much as they just need to compete hard when the game gets turned up and it is physical. You've got to have the ability to go with it. And I think they do. And the games, again, at the end of the day, it usually reverts to speed and skill, but you got to be prepared to do some battling too. And I don't know that you can necessarily go out and get in a quick trade or a quick fix. 6'3" or 6'4" power forwards that can score 30 or 40 and knock everybody all over the ice either.
No, you know what, Bobby? I always believe that the playoffs are a learned process, and I honestly think that Marner's, Matthews, Nylander, they will be the better for it this year's postseason, having gone through what they went through last year.
Absolutely. That's part of the, you know, Vegas kind of spoiled us all for having that attitude. I've always kind of just assumed and believed that if you're going to be successful in the playoffs, you need to be unsuccessful. Now, how many failures did the Washington Capitals
exactly.
have before they finally got there? And it was kind of weird that they were ultimately triumphant over a team that was in their first year in the National Hockey League, which kind of threw that whole you gotta pay your dues before you can ultimately win the prize. But, you know, they came real close, Vegas did, to winning the prize without paying any dues whatsoever. So I don't know how much of that is still true, but I still think that, you know, the best foundation for success is failure. And sometimes, you know, it strains the loyalty of fans because in the case of the Caps, I mean, Caps fans, probably a lot of them gave up on this team ever winning a cup with this core, and lo and behold, they did it. And they exercised the demon of the Pittsburgh Penguins along the way. So, you know, losing to Washington 2 years ago, losing to the Bruins last year, losing to the Bruins on Saturday night, and all these lessons along the way, you know, not playing as well as they should have against the Detroit Red Wing team that really kind of took them to the woodshed in a lot of ways the other night. You know, those are all valuable learning experiences, and that's, you know, that's how you develop that thick outer layer and you get tougher and mentally tougher, physically tougher, and do all the things you need to take the next step when it matters most.
Well, and in reality, Tampa's kind of in a similar position.
Oh, 100%. They won a new Washington.
Yeah, they won the round last year, but they I guess they got through a couple of rounds, but then they ended up losing, and they're a team, like, all they do is win in the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a formality that they're going to end up with 115 points, and they're loaded with skill, and, you know, similar debates and similar questions. And during the regular season, I mean, these two teams, they're both first and second overall in the league. So.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no question about that. And you got to know that each away at Steven Stamkos and Victor Hedman and those core guys that got to the Stanley Cup final against Chicago and didn't get it done and haven't gotten back to the final since then. And that's the hard part. You know, the window's open. It's never been more open to the Tampa Bay Lightning than it is right now. But, you know, if you fail to get all the way there, over time, the window starts to close. So I'm sure that they feel like, you know, that's a real good example of a team that's paid its dues and thinks they're due now.
Absolutely. They really are like Washington. And now Braden Point, who is so good. He is such a good player, and Yanni Gourde. So they are going to have some contractual stuff down the stretch, too, where they're going to, like, in the next couple of years. So their window, it is now, with what they're paying Stamkos, what they've got Kucherov for. When you take a look at the back end, the addition of Ryan McDonagh. So, yeah, this is. We'll see if John Cooper can get it done with this team this year. I like their chances.
It's going to be fascinating because you're right. The Braden Point one is going to be a tough contract to do, but it's, you know, they'll get you to Matthews, Marner, Line A, Kyle Connor, Matthew Tkachuk, Brock Besser, and the list goes on and on. But, you know, one of the advantages I guess they've got is that, you know, now next year, Kucherov's 9.5 kicks in next season. And then you've got Stamkos on the money that he's making that, you know, and Hedman took I'll call it a club-friendly deal. Could have got a lot more. Mm-hmm. He went to free agency. Could have got a lot more than what he's making there. And so they've got some, what I would call, I don't want to call them speed bumps, but call them for if you're Braden Point or any player on the Tampa Bay Lightning, you would look at Kucherov's deal at 9.5 and Stamkos' deal at less than that and Hedman's deal at less than 8, and you would say, okay, those guys took less. Maybe I should take less too. Or in the case of Point, it might even be, you know what, maybe I'll have to sign up for the Kucherov bridge deal that he did. He did a 3-year bridge deal. That's probably where maybe Point cut it, even though a player of his stature should probably get a 7 or 8 year contract. The thing I find interesting is there are no speed bumps on the Toronto Maple Leafs. When Marner and Matthews go to do their deals, you know, they look and say, oh, there's Tavares. He's making 11. And Nylander's making almost 7, and he sat out to get that. So there's nothing you need to feel guilty about when you ask for 10, 11, or 12 if you're those guys. Whereas in Winnipeg, when Line A and Connor say, Line A goes to ask for 10 or 11, and Scheifele's at 6 and change, and Wheeler's at 8, and those, again, just something that might moderate how a player views his own value on his own team and what other guys have done ahead of him in terms of taking one for the team. And outside of Morgan Riley, who's on a club-friendly deal, there aren't a lot of prime, tangible examples of that on the Leafs. And that's kind of what they need here if they're gonna split this atom, the salary cap atom, over the next number of years.
Enjoy it out there, Bob. We'll do it again later in the week.
Awesome. Thanks, Doug.
Thanks, Bob.
Bob McKenzie, our TSN Hockey Insider.